Given concern about Russia's intentions for Ukraine, we'll get a briefing on the outsized role of energy supply lines in international affairs. I'm David Brancaccio. The top diplomats of Russia and the U.S. are meeting today in Geneva amid fears of war in Ukraine. This given Russian troop movements near Ukraine's border in recent weeks. The U.S. and Europe are warning Moscow of severe sanctions if there were to be an invasion or other hostilities, and lifelines of energy linking Russia to Western Europe could be brought to bear, especially natural gas. The Economist magazine's Russia and Eastern European editor Arkady Ostrovsky joins us from London now. Welcome.
Good morning to you.
Let's talk about international pressure points in terms of energy supply lines. People need to know that key parts of Europe already get a lot of their natural gas from Russia.
That's right. It's been a problem for a very long time. I mean, since the days of the Cold War, Russia and before that, the Soviet Union were the major suppliers of natural gas to Europe. You know, Russia exports between 40 to 50% to the whole of Europe. Germany is particularly vulnerable. It gets up to 75% of its natural gas through Russia. And that gas, of course, still goes largely through the territory of Ukraine. And Russia has been constructing, has now completed, a pipeline that bypasses Ukraine over the Baltic Sea and goes straight to Germany. That's the contentious Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And so the fear is that in case of a military conflict, Russia might actually cut off its supplies of gas.
But, you know, two can play at that, right? Germany, I think, is keeping open the possibility now that depending on what Russia does, Germany might support stopping that Nord Stream 2 project, which would make it harder for Russia to make money selling its gas.
Correct. You know, it's not just Germany that is dependent on Russian gas. Russia is also dependent on the sale of that gas to Europe. Russia is making plans and is building pipeline capacity to export it to China, but that will take quite some time, possibly 10 years, before Russia can actually substitute Europe for China as a sort of the main market. For now, Europe remains Russia's biggest market. Russia cannot just store this gas, or not all of it anyway, so it does need to export it, and it needs the revenue. Just to remind you that even at the height of the Cold War, gas supplies were not interrupted. The fact that Putin has now made it sort of a issue dragged into conflict is actually quite new.
And Arkady, I assume before we go, you're paying a lot of attention to all the headlines coming off your phone and your screen?
Yes, it has been an extraordinary few weeks and months, actually, since Russia's build-up. The truth is, nobody really knows what Vladimir Putin is going to do, whether this is a genuine preparation for war. From where I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at it from the point of view of reporting on Russian domestic politics, the logic from the Kremlin's point of view of attacking Ukraine now is far from obvious to me. That is not to say that it will not happen, but if it were to happen, it would be quite irrational and extremely damaging to Russia's interests and to the interests of the Kremlin itself, which is what makes this story so hard to decipher.
Arkady Ostrovsky is The Economist magazine's Russia and Eastern European editor. He used to be the magazine's Moscow bureau chief. Mr. Ostrovsky, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Let's do the numbers. After the NASDAQ index fell another 1.3% yesterday, I see it's down 7.75% for the month so far. This morning, NASDAQ futures are down 0.8%. S&P futures are down 0.4%. After Netflix warned about subscriber growth tapering down, its stock fell nearly 20% yesterday, a fifth of its worth gone in a day. We've reported on efforts to spread the bounty of technology jobs to places like Appalachia that have talent and could use the work. Well, there's news now that Intel is going to invest $20 billion to build a complex of semiconductor factories near Columbus, Ohio. Intel says it'll hire 3,000 people in a first phase. Intel, one of the original companies that gave California's Silicon Valley its name, already has a big expansion going on in Arizona amid a worldwide shortage of microprocessing chips. Thank you. There's news that later this year, Amazon will open a brick-and-mortar clothing store near Los Angeles. Amazon's online clothing business has been growing throughout the pandemic with so much shopping from home, but a physical location has advantages. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
Amazon says shoppers will scan QR codes for items they like. Staff will then place those items in a fitting room where shoppers can continue to shop on their phones or on touchscreens. Marketing professor Barbara Kahn at the Wharton School says that's quite a step up from the old department store experience.
You go into a dressing room, you took all the wrong sizes in there, you got to put your clothes way back on and then go outside and get new clothes. What a hassle that is.
Amazon also says it'll use algorithms to make personalized recommendations. Wendy Liebman of WSL Strategic Retail says Amazon will also be learning about how people shop for clothes.
Amazon, again, will know more about you and your fashion preferences, anything else you bought online.
Amazon is just launching one store for now. Analyst Sucharita Kodali at Forrester says it's likely an experiment, much like its other in-person stores.
You know, of which there are many. There are many in grocery, convenience stores, hair salons, you know, the list goes on.
If it works, Kodali says Amazon could also sell the store's technology to other clothing retailers in the future. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
All right, Friday, people. Our digital producer is Redmond Caralipio. Our engineers are J.C. Bold and Jessen Dueler. Our intern is Jared Dang. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.